Live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, and in parallel from the Turf Sup Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning in to the Water Zone Show this evening.
Well, a pleasant good evening to listeners all across the country and across the world. If they can also get us on various stations, I'd like to welcome you to the Water Zone Show this evening. I'm Rob Starr, along with Mr. Chris Davies. Welcome, Chris Davies.
Thanks very much, Rob. How are you tonight? That's tough not seeing you, but I just want to make a comment about last week's show with Madeline Glickfeld. Great, great reports and responses from the listeners. Thank you, everybody out there. It was a good show. Just had to throw that up, Rob.
Oh, no, very much appreciate that. It was a great show. You're absolutely right. So hopefully tonight's show is going to be even as good or better. So I'm excited getting ready for that.
Yes, sir.
Hello? Oh, okay. I thought I hit the wrong button here on my phone. good. And again, to our listeners, we corrected because we didn't have a problem last week with the call-in lines. And we shouldn't be dropping anybody. And we have a gentleman coming on the show later who's our featured guest, who was on one of the shows that only made it not even 20 seconds on the show before we went dead. So we appreciate him coming back on the show, but we'll get to that in a bit. But anything new out there in California?
Which Chris are you addressing there? Both of us?
I haven't introduced her yet, but go ahead, Mr. Davey.
He hasn't introduced me yet. No one knows I'm here.
Oh, okay. Well, now that we hear you, it's just hard not being in the studio and doing this the right way. But anyway, I'd like to introduce a formal introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, guys and gals, live and in color, direct from Southern California, because you're not northern. Well, you're in the northern part of L.A., right?
Yes.
Okay, so you're from... Right. This is Chris Austin.
In the beautiful city home to Magic Mountain.
You should do a show there. Miss Chris Austin from Maven's Notebook. Welcome, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
We're doing good. Everybody's spread out. Someday we'll all get to see each other again in person and be next to each other. We've been doing this for a year. I can't believe that. All these remotes. Unbelievable. But as they say in show business, the shows must go on.
The last time that I went anywhere was actually, I believe, about March 7th, so I've been sitting at home here. The other day I went out and I had to lock up the house, and I had a hard time finding the keys on my keychain because I haven't had to lock up the house because someone has been here for years.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I have a house key here somewhere. I know.
Well, I think the only thing that keeps me sane, and probably the same for Chris Davies, is that we always get to participate in Zoom or team meetings on video. So you get to kind of see somebody, but it's still not the same. You still, people interrupt, and not on purpose. I mean, you just, it's not like you're sitting in front of somebody and they see your hands and you stop talking and then they start. It's like everybody's jumping on top of each other trying to do the thing. So calling into shows is a little different.
It's different, though, Zoom and team meetings and all. They're different. Although I will tell you this, listeners, I found the secret. If you haven't been able to go to the beauty salon for like a year, that you can have Zoom put on nicely trimmed eyebrows for you. And you can also use Zoom lipstick. I found this, and this is great, because I was like, oh, wow, that's so much better.
They have those things where you can pick out your eyeglasses, and they have an app that you go to one of these, I forget the name of the company, but they show your face, and then they show you...
Yeah, Warby Parker. An endorsement, because I haven't done anything with them, but I'm sorry, shouldn't say that. Zoom has figured it out with eyebrows and lipstick. I'm just waiting for the thin filter, make me look thin. Okay, I'm waiting for that. So. But anyway,
well, I'll wait for Halloween so I can get my lipstick and hair thing. But anyway, I got to do a quick announcement real quick about from the Irrigation Association. This is who are some of our fans and people are in the landscape lighting industry. So don't miss your chance to show off the Irrigation and Green Industry Magazine's new challenging. They have a new contest called Changing the Landscape Awards is looking for amazing projects done in the past 2 years by landscape and irrigation professionals across three categories, landscape design, irrigation, and lighting. And the awards spotlight work that took on difficult obstacles or produced outstanding results. We hope they did both. Each winner will be focused on an in-depth feature article and an upcoming issue of Irrigation and Green Industry News. And show what matters to your work as it stands out and submit your project by March 29th, a couple more days, to www.ign.com/CPI Awards. I'll repeat that, www.ign.com/CPI Awards. And the CTL Awards are sponsored by Ditch Witch, which is a Toro company. I have to promote that as well. Dawn Industries and Brilliance LED. So anybody in those industries that knows anybody or does it themselves and want to submit an application for this, I would highly recommend that. And get noticed. Get your business noticed and highlighted and get interviewed on our show too as well. So anyway, that's enough for the IA. So Chris, what's happening in water this week?
Well, we had this big announcement earlier this week. Well, actually, two things happened. The first thing happened is that the State Water Board sent a letter out to everybody who has water rights in California and told them that they need to start thinking about dry year planning and where they're going to get their water because it's not looking good. Unless you've had your head under a rock, you probably already knew that, but having an official statement from the State Water Board kind of carries some weight. And, you know, I mean, this is the time when farmers are, you know, planning their planting season and getting their everything lined up in a row. So it's important for them to understand that the water supply is, you know, really in jeopardy at this moment because we've had such a dry year in California. All of the precipitation, it seems like, went north to Washington, where Washington, they're saying they've had a winter and a half, and also into the Midwest, where Denver, as of this morning, was 3 inches away from setting an all-time snow record, and they will probably make that. So, you know, there is precipitation available on the planet. It just went to other places. So this means, you know, we all need to brace for a dry year. And then the next day, I believe it was on Tuesday, the State Water Project and the Central Valley Project, the two major water delivery projects in the state, came out with their allocations for the coming year. The State Water Project had an initial allocation back when they gave it, which was, I don't know, December or January. It was 10% of your requested amount. And they actually did a very unusual thing. They backed down from 10% and they pulled it down to 5%. So 5% of the water that you're asking for from the State Water Project would go to those water contractors. That's not a lot. And for those on the Central Valley Project, they have a range of contractors with a range of contract entitlements, but the main one that people seem to focus on is what they call South of Delta agriculture, which is anything pretty much south of Sacramento. And, you know, the San Joaquin Valley is the major farming center of the nation. And they had issued back in February a initial allocation of 5% to all their South of Delta contractors. And on Tuesday, they said, well, we don't even know if that 5% is going to be available. So there's a bunch of farmers that were told that they might not be getting any water, essentially, this year. So things are pretty tight. Reservoirs are not in critical shape, but they're not in great shape. And so I think, you know, while every year we should always be using water wisely and conservatively, I think we're going to need to really look at, everyone's going to really need to look at their water use this year and be prepared. There's going to be restrictions, no doubt, and we're all going to need to be careful because the snowpack, it just isn't there. And yeah, that's going to have some impact. So,
wow. So everything's, and I guarantee you, we'll cut back on water, and the price of water, you think, will go up as well?
Well, the way that most, you know, it's likely to go up, yes. And, you know, a lot of this is because we have structured our water agencies to be much different than a regular business. So you know, people need to first realize that there isn't really a profit margin. If you have a public water agency, they can only charge you for the cost of water, delivering the water to your place of residence. They have different ways they set up their rates. Some are more effective and more fair than others, but you may be in a situation where if your rates are structured so that, you know, in certain ways, you will pay more even though you use less. There are, you know, again, setting rates is a very technical process, and you have to really get it right. There are other rate structures, like if you have an investor-owned utility that supplies your water, they, you know, you shouldn't really feel that they're raking in the buck so they have all this extra profit, because even these investor-owned utilities have to go in front of the California Public Utilities Commission and justify any rate increase that they give you. So, you know, yeah, things are likely to go up because your water agency isn't like a regular business, and there isn't this big pot of cash that sits there to help people, you know, through these times. Now, that being said, on a total offshoot, I should say that there are several assistance programs that seem to be coming out that will help people who have water debt because of the pandemic and that they've lost their jobs. So, you know, there is help for those people.
I remember years back, and I don't remember a couple of years back, within the last 8 to 10 years, L.A. County hired somebody that was called an ombudsman, and his job was to be the intermediary between the people and the Public Utilities Commission, both for water and electricity. And his job was to stick up for the people. So of all the times that the 8 utilities went in front of the PUC, guess how many times they rejected the rate hikes during
probably
this gentleman's reign?
Just about everyone.
That's correct. And he was making in the high 6 figures for this. So I don't know. I don't know if he's still there or whatever. But you know, making that kind of money and sticking up for the common people, but yet every time they brought something up, he got rejected. So I don't know. I don't know. Was that just to pay somebody to be in that position and be a yes guy to the PUC? But, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, water agencies have to have customers and they have to use water so they can make money. I mean, you know, even when there's a drought, they still have the operations to run.
Yeah. And you know, while yes, you know, I will say people who work at the water utilities make a nice income, but they also they make that nice income because they have a lot of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't hire Joe Blow off the sidewalk to go run a water agency. I mean, there are engineers and there are highly trained personnel that are there doing that kind of work.
Agreed.
And they're not like becoming rich. They live nicely. They should, because they provide important services to the community. But
the operations people need to be there full time. Yeah, whether there's a drought or not, or the people using less water, the operations has to be maintained, and you can't bring slugs in to do the job of the people who are professionals to know what they're doing. Otherwise, the water will go bad. You know. So I agree with that. It's just, you know, this thing with the ombudsman's been really gotten my claw thinking about it. Well, you know, you're sticking up for the people, but yet you didn't save them any money. But yes, I agree. The operations still has people have to understand that. They still have to treat the water. They still have to pump it. They still got to maintain it and all that. So yeah, they got to go. And you know what we're going to get into with our next guest talking about the World Water Day, where the Secretary General of the UN, you know, they want to talk about the value of water, valuing water. And that's a big thing. People here, I don't think in the States, really value it as they do, say, in Israel or some other places where there's a real scarcity of water.
I think, unfortunately, because we have made water essentially free, in a sense,
yep.
I mean, I'm way more attuned to the power, because the power bill is huge in our house. So I'm always running around going, turn that off, turn that off, turn that off. And, you know, and sure, I bang on the door for, you know, when my kid's in the shower too long, get out of there. You know, although he's in his weird teenage phase where he doesn't take many showers at all anymore. So that's fine. But nonetheless, okay, you know, the electricity bill, the cell phone bill, those bills, I mean, you have a signal that says I should not waste this because it's going to cost me a lot of money. But in most cases here, your water is one of the cheapest things that you have. And so,
yes, you're right.
And even though we've had droughts and all these things, people still seem to feel that, you know, you use as much water as you want. It's like, I have a right to have a brilliant green lawn out in front of my house, you know, and I'm going to water it. Water's going to run into the gutter and you know, go. We have this whole thing that we work on trying to, you know, figure out how to repurpose. We call it urban slobber. And that's all the water that runs off people's lawns in dry weather and goes into the storm sewers in the drains, and it's just wasted water. If it's dry and you have water running down your gutter, somebody is wasting it, right?
Absolutely.
It should be happening.
Mr. Davey, do you remember years ago back in the 90s when out in Irvine and all the where all the high-tech companies were, they were painting their grass?
I remember that. During the drought, it actually became a business for several people. Landscapers were shutting down, no more mowing and edging and blowing, so they started to paint lawns.
Yeah.
and now we have
artificial turf.
We've been talking around here in our house, you know, and I'll just say, if there's any landscaper out there that wants a property to do for that award for next year, yeah, send them my way, okay? But we were talking around about here about what we should do about our landscaping. And, you know, my son says, well, maybe we should just, you know, have cactus and rocks in our front yard. And I just want to say, yeah, that's one way you can go. But there are other ways, and I'm sure your awards will show them, where you can use things like California native plants. They won't use much water. You can help support butterflies and birds and all the native species that are around here. And you can have a beautiful property. It won't take much water, and it doesn't have to be cactus and rocks. Okay, cactus and rocks, by the way, not necessarily a, some of these people that have these rocks on their yards, they emanate heat like you wouldn't believe. They suck it up in the daytime and they release it all night. It's not the best way to go. And you don't have to do that unless that's what you want. If you want that, then that's great. Go do it. But there are lots of beautiful native, species and plants you can put in your instead of a lawn. You don't have to have a lawn. You can have these other things. Although, I will say, I do believe that if you have a use for a lawn, then you should have a lawn. If you have kids and they play in the back, you should have a lawn. You have dogs, you have to have lawns. But there's a lot of grass in places where people never put their feet.
That's true. But there's a lot of reasons to have turf. And there's so many turf companies. We had a gentleman who is president of a company called Pearl's Premium Grass, and you don't have to water this thing for like 2-3 months at a time, and you don't have to mow it every week or anything like that, and it's beautiful. I'm sure there's other species of other grass seeds or varieties that are out there, but he has sent us a bunch of a couple cases that we gave away to listeners. And we have pictures sent in of what some of these lawns look like, and they're just beautiful. And they use very little water, and you know, very little maintenance to that. And you know, it absorbs dirt from the air. It helps with pollution. It helps with sound. It protects a whole bunch of things.
So many things.
Yeah,
and, I mean, it's so much better.
But in the medium,
something with your lawn other than rocks and cactus.
I agree with you. I'm sure you would agree, like medians in the street. You know, nobody walks on those things. You don't need grass for those things.
And you could have that, like you were saying, that water-tolerant grass, you know, the low-water grass.
Yeah.
You could, or all sorts of things. I mean, I really don't think that the answer to our water problems is to take out lawns, but it's to take out the grass in the places where people's feet never step. If you have a use for that lawn, then you should have that lawn, and you shouldn't feel guilty about it, you know. But if you no one ever puts their feet on that lawn, then, you know, why is it there? That, you know,
you need to be thoughtful.
Well,
like you said, the rocks generate heat. The turf grass helps cool the area next to your home, and just like trees and such. So all of those are real important things.
And since you don't have these people on the show, it's like it's better than fake grass. I mean, fake grass. I'm not a fan. You know, it's like, you know, I don't know how you deal with fake grass. If you want fake grass, then why not get the low water tolerant grass and have something actually living that you put your foot on, and it's cooling in the summer.
Yeah.
You know, when you go out and it's hot, what is hotter, the grass or the brown dirt? It's the dirt.
Yeah.
I mean, the dirt, you can't step on that in your bare feet, you know, and I don't think people necessarily realize that, you know. Yes, grass, you know, I think grass has its place, you know, in our landscape, but, you know, people put their feet. So.
Well, there was a survey taken, my wife had showed it to me, and they asked about 15 different questions. What smell? The two out of this list of 25, pick the top two smells that you would like to do. So I picked the smell of cut grass and chocolate donuts. That's what I picked. But that was in the top 80% of what people picked. But you're right. I mean, there's lots of good things. If you use things efficiently and wisely, you'll have a great landscape. Well, Chris, we're coming up against our commercial break. We do appreciate that you come on every single week and give us the news about water, what's happening in California. And our next guest, who's going to be on, is going to talk a little about some things that he sees in that, about the scarcity of water. But just to remind our folks, please go to mavensnotebook.com. It's www.mavensnotebook.com. Become a subscriber. Become a donator to it. And it's a wonderful source to get water news every single day. You don't have to leave your house. You can still stay in your house and be doing your COVID thing, but you can get the water news every single morning delivered on your computer. And it's a great thing to do, and it's the most up-to-date place to get it. So, Chris, thank you very much for being on. We do appreciate it, and we'll talk to you actually in 2 weeks, since we're going to be broadcasting out of Florida next week. So I wanted to say thank you, and you have a good week, and stay safe from COVID.
I will. Everyone else, too. Get your vaccination.
Great. You got it. All right, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in a moment. So stick around for our featured guest, and it's Mr. Tisdale, Reese Tisdale, and he's the CEO of Bluefield Research, and a great person to talk to. So stick around. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is 1050 AM KCAA Loma Linda and 106.5 FM Yucaipa.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Well, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. Eco Series products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco Solvent Cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
Time to take a water break and talk some water. Irrigation. Such a refreshing topic. As more and more markets face water restrictions, your customers may be hungry, or should I say thirsty, for water-saving products. For new installations, add options like drip irrigation, controllers that respond to weather data, pressure regulating heads, or heads with check valves. They all provide easy ways to differentiate your bids and win more jobs. Or for an extra stream of revenue, offer existing customers upgrades like high efficiency nozzles, rotary nozzles, or Wi-Fi based controllers. Because when you help your customers save water, you make a world of difference for the earth and your bottom line at the same time. We'll drink to that.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone. Apologies for the slight delay there, as we're trying to get back back online for our second guest. I hope Rob is back on the air with us right now. I think he was checking on that. Rob, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here now.
All right, there he goes.
So I don't know what happened. Again, at least we didn't get disconnected this time. And I know I sent an email to this gentleman, but just so you hear our voice, we sincerely apologize for the technical difficulties that we had during the last show that you were on, and hopefully we got that all corrected. So, Chris, I'll let you do the intro.
You bet, Rob. Thanks very much. All right, guys, we're very happy to welcome back a guest. This gentleman is Reese Tisdale. Extensive background in our industry for our listeners out there. Just a great background in environmental consulting in the water, power, and energy sectors. He's president and CEO of Bluefield Research, just a leading research and advisory firm that's focused on the energy, water, power, and energy sectors. Before that, lots of background as a researcher working for IHS Emergency Energy Research. Lots of experience in other countries. Worked in El Salvador for several years. Last time we had Reese on the show, it was a big friendly show for our guests, and we got a lot of cheers for that. So Reese has been cited in Bloomberg News, on CBS News, The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and so on. And he also is a regular guest on another podcast, one of our colleagues in the water podcast sector, and that is a show called The Water Values Podcast. So, Reese, for a second time, we'd like to welcome you back to The Water Zone.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Good, good to be back. And, yeah, absolutely. Rob, it was crazy last time. It sounds like to no fault of any of ours, so I am happy to be here.
No, it happened over several weeks, and it was very embarrassing, and our sponsors want to know how come their commercial didn't get played, and NBC is saying, hey, what's going on? What's the dead space? But it was a call-in lines that they that we were using, and it's all been replaced, and so we won't have the disconnections anymore, so we're very happy about that. Thank you. Appreciatively for coming back on our show. We do appreciate all your wisdom and what you got to say. So, Chris, I'll let you lead it off again. And
yeah, no problem. For those listeners, know that Reese is on the East Coast, so you know, it's past his bedtime. As an older guy, 60 may be the new 40, but I'll tell you what, 9 o'clock is the new midnight for us. So, right, Reese?
Yeah, no, believe me. Everybody in my house practically asleep, but you know, hey, the Bruins are still playing, and you know, we're good to go. So
yeah, there you
all
go.
Right.
Well, we're going to talk about a number of things tonight, and I'm again really excited to have you back on. But you know, I thought I'd open it up and just kind of introduce the show under the auspices of the fact that just earlier this week was World Water Day, right? Not a lot of people know about that. We've spoken about that on some of the text back and forth on the Water Zone website. A lot of people interested in that today, and I know that Bluefield Research plays a big part in World Water Day. Why don't you tell us a little about your role in that?
Yeah, I mean, it was the 22nd Monday. It's the 22nd of March every year, World Water Day. It's designated by the UN, and I think, you know, it's really this year is when we've always sort of done little things along the way, but this year at Bluefield Research, we've made a big effort to, one, not only recognize it, because there have been a lot of, I mean, the world's kind of a crazy place right now in many respects, but also just, you know, they're recognizing World Water Day, you know, for everybody to recognize the value of water. And I think, you know, what we saw in Texas 2 weeks to a month ago, when the well runs dry or the pumps stop pumping, everybody sort of suddenly realizes, oh my, oh, you know, wow, the water does really have value, not only just, you know, economical value to industry and sort of its operation of a facility or plant, but also just in the households. And I think, as your previous guest had mentioned, you know, you don't realize that, you know, its cost or its value until it's gone. And so the UN has recognized that, and we've put an effort into supporting WaterAid, which is a nonprofit group supporting actually one of their big causes for this year is frontline workers. You can't wash your hands without water. particularly when you get into developing countries and emerging markets. So that's been a big part of it. And, you know, we're trying to spread the word, and because the more people are educated on water issues, whether it be here or internationally, it makes for bigger, better opportunities for the industry such as ourselves. But also people understand what it really means and basically the value of it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Reese, for us here on the radio show and for us at Toro, too, in our Toro lives, just the significance of bringing everything, you know, to bear, bringing recognition to all the water issues around the world. I know Toro sends a group of people on a volunteer basis to underprivileged country somewhere in the world, and that team does great work. My own boss a year before last, was part of that team. And you just had some amazing stories when he came back. All right,
yeah,
so let's get started.
I might add one thing that's a little kind of crazy about it is,
sure.
Hopefully I didn't mention this on your last show, is that last time I joined you guys, and that was, you mentioned I used to live in El Salvador. Water was a 45-minute walk away. That's one way, but I could get a Coca-Cola in 2 minutes. From where
yeah.
I live, so it's kind of crazy. So that's the state of the world in many places. So yeah, sorry
yeah.
to cut it off. Go for it, Chris.
No problem. That, you know, the juxtaposition of that and what we take for granted here in our everyday lives, and what a 30% of the world has to deal with that we don't. When you think about the gravity of that, Reese, it's a radio show in itself just talking about that topic, and we
yeah.
had that as a topic on the radio show.
Yeah.
All right. So when you said you heard a little bit about our previous guest, which is Chris Austin from Maven's Notebook, which is a California mm-hmm. Water News website. She talked a little bit about the drought, especially facing us here in this state, in California. And I know that for Bluefield Research, a large part of some of the research you've done is around the drought in California. So maybe you can address for us some of the strategies around water scarcity that you guys have some research and data on.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we look at, you know, sort of alternative water supply sources, such as everything from, you know, desalination. I know there are obviously a couple of plants in California as an option, but also just wastewater reuse. And I think, you know, what we're seeing, not only in California, but in other parts of the U.S., other states, but also internationally as well, that, you know, it's really, we track, you know, project by project, facility by facility, where the opportunities, not only for direct potable or indirect potable reuse and reclamation of wastewater, but also just for industrial and agricultural offtake. I mean, I think one of the things that is of interest, because as you guys probably well know, is, you know, desalination is the most expensive water out there when it comes to producing it. And so water reuse I would say California is now on the leading edge. It hasn't always been the case. Actually, Florida is a big reuse market. It has been for other reasons, really because of aquifer overdrawing from the aquifer and basically giving everybody salty water when they pull from the aquifer. But in California, it's a little bit of a different story. And actually, after the last drought is really when it felt like it was taking on great momentum. And there have been a lot more projects. It's just still slow going on the municipal side of the sector. But nonetheless, we're seeing more and more of that. But yeah, it is a little... I think everybody in California is well aware of what's happening with the drought, because it's in the news every day. I think people are also fearful of the wildfires. I think for the rest of the country, it's not so obvious. I think in many cases, they look at the, you know, West and they say, oh, this is the same old drought, but actually it's not. It's just another wave of challenges and problems. So,
yeah, you hit the head.
What's happening.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, a lot of people think, you know, there's a lot of differences and disparities between different water problems, and they're not. They're pretty much all the same, right? California, they think about as a unique state, But really, when it comes to its water issues, it's not that unique at all. It's facing the same things as many states across the country are. So kind of using that as a turning point, you know, we look at a new administration that's just come in here, the Biden administration, right, coming in. Can you maybe, I don't know how much you've thought about this, but maybe you can just comment a little bit on how you think the Biden administration is going to approach, you know, all the water infrastructure that we need, the chronic underinvestment in this segment of the infrastructure for years. I mean, what are your thoughts just generally?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I look at it from a couple different angles. One, I think first and foremost, I think everybody just wants the pandemic to disappear so we can all move on with our lives. So that's obviously job number one. But when it comes to, so once that is sort of settled, and I think we're moving to that point pretty quickly, relatively quickly at least. On the water side, you know, you mentioned aging infrastructure. Our system is old. It's been around a long time across the country, so it's getting older day by day. So in a vacuum, to repair, rehabilitate, replace assets that are already there, you know, it makes sense. You can do that. The challenge that I see in just sort of in that vacuum-like approach is that we don't live in a vacuum. And so what we're now facing more of, we're facing things like climate issues, and it's drought is one of them. Flooding is another. Freeze outs in Texas being another. Wildfires being another. So that's happening. And then you also have to deal with other factors that are influencing the municipal utilities and municipalities, and that is things like, you know, the Internet of Things and cybersecurity comes along that with that, like we saw in Florida not long ago with the Oldsmar water utility where someone hacked into the system. So my point is that in a vacuum, rehabilitating or replacing our existing infrastructure seems pretty straightforward. But we can't do that because the utilities are now not only having to focus on that, and the utility operators are looking there, but they're also now having to focus on these other factors that were, quite honestly, unforeseen or not at the high on the priority list a decade or two decades ago, when a lot of this infrastructure may have even been going into the ground. So the world's changing. And so when it comes to the Biden administration, how are they going to deal with it? One, I think it's going to take federal dollars and federal leadership. It's not going to just happen by saying, hey, private sector, take this over. Let's do public-private partnerships. That may be part of the portfolio of solutions. It's going to take a more centralized approach, and it's going to have to be even more widespread than just the big municipalities where a lot of the dollars can go. It's going to have to go into rural America where, quite honestly, where a lot of the stress is really happening.
Yeah, there's lots of people about the Central California. We learned last week from one of our guests here that in Los Angeles, there's a lot of places that the water is really bad to drink, and the prices are ridiculous to some of these. So there's like 200 little water agencies that are trying to supply water to some of these areas, and they're low income, by the way.
Yeah,
and it's a tough situation. You know, you mentioned cybersecurity, and I have a daughter she's in the FBI, and she was telling me, you know, one of the things that they think about, or she thinks about, is, you know, terrorists and cybersecurity. I'll go into that with you in a second. I'm not the expert at that. You probably more than me. But she was saying, you know, you can take a little model airplane and have a couple of test tubes of surf and fly it over a water agency or a dam and drop it in. And next thing you know, a couple hundred thousand dead. And I think that's something, you know, because we always talk about, you see on the news, at least I hear on the news, oh, well, you know, our electrical grid, it's really in bad shape. Why do we say this to the world so they know that we're weak in these areas? Or today, the U.S. launched a spy satellite. Or why do we tell people this? I mean, I know we want to be transparent, but there's some things for our security that I don't think we should tell anybody about. But yeah, I worry about, you know, somebody getting a hold of the power grid or the water system or anything, and terrorists can find that. I mean, we know this U.S. has been hacked by different countries for lots of things.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I mean, as good as Go ahead. I wanted your opinion on that.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say what's interesting about this is, you know, typically what we've seen when it comes to cyber security or cyber threats, you know, particularly in the water sector specifically, we've seen, you know, what we've typically seen is, you know, someone trying to hack into, you know, customer data, trying to get credit cards or billing data or mm-hmm. sort of personal information, and they can reuse that sort of, not to make light of it, but to make a quick buck, right?
Sure.
Then we've started to see sort of ransom attacks where they have gone to cities like the city of Baltimore and essentially held them hostage and said, hey, we're shutting down the city or certain aspects of your enterprise software systems until you pay us money. So there's a ransomware attack. What we've seen in Florida, this recent one, was really just a lot of open doors, a lot of doors left open, at least when it came to the software system, where someone just saw it and went in and was able to change remotely the chemicals in the water quality. And so it really becomes a water quality and a health issue. And so that is likely, I mean, there's no reason one would think we're just going to start to see more of that. And I think to your point about these small water systems and, you know, in the Central Valley or in the, they don't have the resources nor the technological know-how to even keep up with this. And I think that's what is really concerning. And it's not like there are just 100 of these. There are probably 25 to 30,000 or more systems like that in the U.S. alone.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I've always stood on this little stand here and talk about, I don't care who the people are in the United States. As long as they're here, they should be able to have clean drinking water, period. There's no reason that they shouldn't. And some of these little water agencies, they maybe cover 200 people. The bigger agencies don't want to absorb it because then they have to spend millions of dollars to get it up to speed and all that. So that's the predicament that we got. And I think you're right. The federal government got to start coming in doing this. I'm not trying to be political here. I just wish we'd spend more money on people that live here in the United States and take care of the problems that we got before we throw all our money to everybody else in the world. I believe in a helping hand. I don't believe in a handout. But the life of humans, they should be able to drink. I mean, I feel bad for these poor people that have children or even themselves that they get contaminated water they got to drink, or brown water that smells. And that's hard. I can't believe in today's age and the technology that we have that we're not doing something about it, or the EPA should be doing more about it. But that's just me.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think to do all of this and sort of bring everything up to speed as we would like, the unfortunate part is it's going to take two things. One, we're going to have to address affordability, right? And who can pay for this? And that's affordability for the ratepayer, but also for the city or the municipality or the system owner in dealing with it. And the other part is it's just going to have to take probably some, I don't want to say it's going to have to take a different approach to even how customers are billed, right? Instead of just a purely volume-based, you know, we've seen some examples of income-based billing that's taken place, because if you're low income or you don't have the money, you're just not going to pay your water bill. And, you know, you get into this, you know, to your point, one would think everybody would just have clean, reliable sources of water, right? It does cost money. I mean, there are 4 million miles of water and wastewater pipes in the ground, plus another 75,000 systems that are treating and sort of moving the water around or pumping it. So it's a lot of assets. But I think back to what we started with, World Water Day and the value of water, is understanding the value, but also what it takes to infrastructure-wise to move it around. It is truly amazing, and quite honestly, it's probably one of the greatest achievements in the country, if not the world, is a developed water system to provide clean drinking water.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, with pipes in California and probably other places in the country, they're over 100 years old, and when they break and then the cost to do it, we being Toro, owns a company called Hammerhead. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but They have this blue light technology. Yeah, and it's amazing. They're going to be on our show in a couple of weeks to talk about the technology. And but yeah, those things got to be addressed. Just like I heard today on a press conference from our president about all the bridges and tunnels that are not up to speed and they need to be repaired. I mean, there's a lot of infrastructure we need to fix here. And I think
I would say the one challenge is, you know, this is what is frustrating for me in the water industry is that I look at, you know, whether it be Biden or any politician typically get up there, they do talk about bridges and they talk about roads. That's what everybody sees, right? And so that's, you know, politically speaking, it's, you know, oh, see my new big, you know, gold-plated bridge that the whole community is going to use. No one likes sitting in traffic, so they always like those fancy bridges and they hate potholes. What they seem to always forget, and I don't want to be angry about it, but they seem to forget about the water infrastructure. And that's really a big point that we've been trying to make over the past week is let's not forget about the water piece of the equation. Because you're right, the hammerhead technology or solution, those things are amazing. And for people who haven't gone on a look at the hammerhead technology, I think you can go on YouTube and see the, you know, pipe bursting and things like that. It's really, really interesting just to see how it works. Technically, it's really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's encouraging to look at all the different companies, Reese, out there, and, you know, we see them in our jobs, Rob and I, that are working positively, right? Kind of looking at a bright future, different types of companies that are looking to improve the water infrastructure in the country. And I know you see that as well, don't you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I say this time and time again, and it's technology is not the issue. I know everybody gets excited about, you know, new technologies, but for the water sector, there's so many solutions that are already out there that will solve the problem. It's just a matter of execution. It's a matter of paying for them and implementing them. Because you're right. I mean, things like trenchless pipe rehabilitation or replacement is more cost effective in many cases than just digging up the entire block or street or road and replacing the pipe altogether. So, yeah, I think there's a lot happening. Also, business model wise, there are new solutions across all parts of what, you know, we look at sort of the value chain from technology, but also engineering services. And also, you know, we're starting to see, you know, there are different ownership strategies for systems as well. So there's a lot happening.
Do you think that the United States will ever value water enough to be the same kind of competitive things where it is in Israel, where, you know, the government actually runs all the water over there, but they pay more for money. And people, you know, even the kids, when they grow up, they learn and understand the importance of water from a very young age and the cost of it. So they use it very, they use it more efficiently than we do here.
Yeah, it'll never be centralized like that. The way I look at it is, in the U.S., who really has an advantage in the decision-making process? It really starts with large-scale commercial and or industrial entities. You know, if you go to Texas, and I not to call them out specifically, just as an example, and you can't get a reliable water supply for whether it be, you know, your manufacturing process, you're likely either going to start trying to deal with it yourself, doing on-site reuse, on-site treatment, being more efficient, or you just end up leaving. You know, you'd say, look, we can't operate in this state. We're going to need to go somewhere else. I'm more concerned about the domestic or residential users, right? You have less flexibility. I live in the city of Boston. I can't opt out of my system. I really don't have that choice unless I get really good gutters and start catching and hoarding rain over the course of the year.
You got it.
You know, yeah, so it'll be, and I think that's going to happen. You know, industrial and commercial users, they have the scale, they have the bottom line financially to make decisions that are influenced by water. They've already started, they do it for other reasons. There's no reason that's not going to happen because of water as well.
No, I agree. Well, we're up against our NBC News Hour, and we probably want to have you back again, and we appreciate you coming on. I can't stop the NBC News, so we got to go to that. So,
all right.
Reese, we